Golf Smarter, number 359, published on November 27, 2012, is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. And in our Score Zone Short Game Academy, the Wedge Guy answers a frustrated listener who's not sure how to approach those pesky shots at a distance between two clubs.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Your posture could be the key to fixing your game. With Bob Foreman.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week we tap the best minds in golf to help lower your scores with tips, drills, insights, and advice. In conversation with course pros, architects, authors, players, teaching gurus, and coaches, here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome back to the Golf Smarter Podcast, Bob.
Hey, Fred. Good to be back.
Thank you so much for agreeing to come on. Why don't you give us a quick recap of why we're having you on the show? What is it that you do?
Well, I do golf fitness programming, assessment and training and education. I'm an exercise physiologist by trade, which means I study the effects of exercise on the body. Always had an interest in combining golf, which I enjoy playing, and exercise. And went to the 2006 World Golf Fitness Summit in Orlando when the co-founders of the Titleist Performance Institute presented their then 10 years of research into the physical nature of the golf swing. And the information they provided was unbelievable. It was a wow moment, which basically changed the industry, changed the game overnight. Because prior to that, I mean, everybody, you know, thought that golf and exercise was like oil and water, just in mix.
Right.
And since that time, it's been 180 degrees. And now everybody basically is, you know, all the guys on tours and the gals on tour. And as word is getting out, thanks to shows, you know, podcasts like yours. And
thank you.
You know, the people are becoming aware of the fact that this exercise now, specific exercise, can actually help their game and actually help alleviate and prevent a lot of the golf-related injuries.
Like all the equipment that's out there, all the new equipment and balls, clothes, whatever it is, nothing seems to gain any traction until one player on the tour, at least one high-profile player on the tour, starts using it, and then everyone says, me, I want to do that. Was there, can this be attributed to any specific player on this whole revolution of golf fitness?
Well, I mean, the first, Tiger was you know, one of the highlights in terms of his workouts and stuff like that. You know, Gary Player's been talking about this for years.
Yes, he has.
You know, and I think, unfortunately, with Gary, there was really no research to back what he was saying. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it wasn't until back in 2006 when all the research did come out that we finally said, yeah, Gary's right. You know, exercise and strength training specifically can help a golfer. And then, you know, Tiger and now basically everybody on the PGA Tour is doing it. I don't think you're going to get on the PGA Tour if you're not doing some sort of exercise. Because, you know, from what I understand, from what I hear, a lot of the folks in both the men and women tours are, you know, getting involved and getting trainers and working out on a regular basis.
And what does that do for those folks who just have a different body type?
Well, I don't think it really depends on body type. You know, it's...
Well, some people carry their weight a little bit differently than others, and they, you know, and then, of course, they don't do anything to you know, stop that.
Yeah, and... You know, it's. I think there's also a misconception out there that golf fitness kind of means, you know, you got to be in good physical shape. You got to be able to have good cardiovascular fitness and run 3 miles and do all that kind of stuff. But really what golf fitness is it's a bringing back of balance into the musculoskeletal system so that your body can move efficiently in the skill and activity that it's participating in. So it really doesn't matter, you know, how much you weigh, whether or not you're overweight or you're underweight or you're at ideal weight. I mean, it's really kind of about the muscles and the ligaments and the tendons and the joints and being able to move freely and to get into those good hitting positions, you know, being able to perform those power moves that all the golf publications talk about each month. And that's going to help you make better ball contact. That's going to help you get more distance down the fairway. And that's going to help you play better, healthier golf.
So you're not necessarily, when you talk about fitness, you're not necessarily speaking of cardiovascular. You, like we talked about last time, it's more about flexibility.
Yeah, I really don't do any cardiovascular with my clients.
That's funny. I don't do any cardiovascular at all. So,
I mean, and don't get me wrong, you know, you got to, when you're playing golf, you're out there for 4 and 5 hours. So, and especially if you walk the golf course,
yes.
I mean, that can take a toll on you. So to have a decent amount of cardiovascular fitness is actually, it will work to your advantage. You know, it's when you start getting a little fatigued, when you start, you know, where your swing starts changing a little bit and you start hitting the bad shots and all that. So you definitely want to have a degree of cardiovascular fitness.
Okay.
But a large part of golf fitness is really, you know, like you said, the range of motion, the flexibility, and, you know, golf, certain specific strength in parts of the body so that, you know, you can help stabilize and swing a good golf club.
And as we discussed last time, hydration and nutrition on that golf course. Like I know personally, like I said, I really have been very bad this year. I do not do a lot of cardio. I do no cardiovascular. This year I've just been, it's been awful. And but I do still prefer to walk on a golf course. But I make sure that I have a bottle of water with me at the very least. If it's a hot day, I'll take a Gatorade green.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah,
and then like either a bag, a 3 ounce bag of nuts or some peanut butter pretzels. And the wheels do not fall off my cart or my body, late in the round. And I feel that that has a tremendous amount to do with it.
Oh yeah. I mean, from a nutritional standpoint, it's important that, you know, you start sipping water early in the round. You know, you really shouldn't wait till you're thirsty. You should never wait till you're thirsty
No.
to hydrate. But especially when you're out there, you know, in the sun, in the heat, or even on the, you know, on the cooler days, you know, like we're kind of getting into now. I mean, you know, you'd be surprised. Like I say, just being out there and moving the body and doing all that kind of stuff. I mean, you're going to lose your water, not only through sweat, but through your breathing. And obviously when you're active, you're going to, your respiratory rate picks up. So you tend to lose more water. And, you know, you do have that sweat that you really don't feel, the, you know, that's not dripping down your face or anything. So, you know, you're constantly are sweating, whether you realize it or not. So it is important to make sure that, yeah, you definitely stay hydrated throughout the round. And you do snack on, you know, good food choices, you know, like what you're saying, fruit or, you know, some of these bars that are out there now, these protein bars and energy bars are pretty decent. You know, even, you know, a peanut butter and jelly sandwich is good to take out there with you as well. But, yeah, it's definitely important and a vital component of the game.
Also, one of the words, there's a couple words that you've already mentioned that I'm making note of, and I want to bring them back. And one of them is that you said balance.
Mm.
I know personally, again, mainly on my driver, I tend to swing too hard and fall over backwards after my swing. And when I'm very conscious of it and try to make sure that my lower half of my body stays quiet, and there's less movement there. I also, you know, I stay in position better after, you know, on my follow through of my swing. My balance is better. And strangely enough, I get greater distance on those shots and it's usually straighter.
Mm-hmm. Well, balance, yeah, there's two really, balance is used in two different ways here. Balance in what you were just talking about is very essential in golf. And unfortunately, a lot of people don't really think about balance and they don't practice or train for balance. And, you know, as we tend to get older, we tend to start becoming a little bit more susceptible to being imbalanced and to fall a little bit more. But it's something that, and again, it's because we don't really work at it. I mean, did you get up this morning and get on one foot and balance on one foot and see how long you could stay on that foot? You know, I'm sure a lot of people don't.
Oh, good. But, that was a rhetorical question, right?
Yeah. But, you know, when and part of the assessment that I do on golfers, there is a balance element, and you'd be surprised, I mean, how many, I would say close to 85-90% really are, you know, have some issues with balance. And when you're moving your body part, you know, your body parts in different directions all at the same time, I mean, balance becomes a vital component. And as you're trying to shift your weight, you know, from your trail leg to your target leg, I mean, if you have a balance issue, that's going to kind of play havoc with your swing and your playing performance. So a lot of it is, you know, we don't practice it, number one. And the second issue is that a lot of us tend to lose strength, especially in the lower body. And that correlates to, you know, the inability to maintain balance and such. So it's important to kind of make sure that you do get checked for balance. And even if you don't, I mean, just to practice it, you know, stand on one leg, just try to balance on one leg and see if you have a tougher time trying to balance on your right leg versus your left leg. You'd be surprised how many people, you know, are good on one side, but terrible on the other. And you just need to work on it to make sure that, you know, you're kind of balancing out your balance, so to speak. But the other balance that I was mentioning prior was about balance in the musculoskeletal system, because playing golf will actually create imbalances in your body because of the nature of the sport. It's repetitive and it's one-sided. So, you know, if you're a right-handed golfer, you're swinging a club the same way hundreds of times during a round of golf. So you're working particular muscles in a certain way and you're neglecting other muscles. So over time, you know, you develop these deficiencies and these imbalances in your body from playing in activity, in addition to maybe your lifestyle, for instance, like, you know, your work habits. You know, if you tend to sit a lot during the day, you know, that does a job on creating muscle tightness in your body and muscle weakness. So really what the golf fitness program, and really any good fitness program, I mean, if you went to a real good fitness facility, the one thing that you would want them to do would be to assess you to see where your imbalances are, where your deficiencies are, and to first correct those deficiencies so that you bring balance back into your system. You know, and we're talking left to right, front to back, up and down in the body. And when you do, like I say, you're allowing the body to move more efficiently, more effectively, and that's going to help the particular skill that you're participating in. And then once you do that, then you can progress into more specific sport-related strength. And because now you're in balance, the results that you're going to get will be better and will be quicker. And it's also the imbalances that we have that in our systems that lead to all those nagging aches and pains that we develop. I mean, the lower back, gosh, I mean, you know, the prevalence of low back ache in society alone, never mind golfers, you know, which always tends to be number one anyway amongst, you know, most golfers, male, female, all levels. It's those imbalances in the body that lead up to those chronic aches and pains. And it's not till you really correct those imbalances, those mechanisms for injury, that you really correct the problem and fix the ache and the pain.
Yeah, I know it well. Unfortunately, I know it well. It's time to bring back Catherine Roberts of Yoga for Golfers, because I got to tell you, as I admit that I have not done a lot of cardiovascular, I've done no cardiovascular this year. I still try to do 20 minutes to a half hour of yoga every morning. Let's call it four mornings a week. And I can really tell what my balance is like there, because, you know, I either have to stand on my head or I stand on one foot. And I think that helps me a lot.
Definitely. I would say it probably does a lot. Yoga's great. And unfortunately, though, a lot of guys don't take yoga, and they should. I mean, you go into any yoga class, I bet you your yoga class is probably more women than men.
There are both. Yeah, we both have men and women, and I would say yes, there's more women. But I have found a great, I don't even do a class. I found a great website on my iPad and videos right there, and it's called Yoga Glow. It is a monthly fee, but it's so worth it for me to have that and just not have to leave the house. Mm-hmm. And there's this one teacher I think is phenomenal. So, yeah, it's been real easy to make a nice yoga. And there's 10, 15, 20, 30, 45, 90, 60, 90-minute different practices that on there. So it really works for my schedule, and it's addicting.
Yeah, that sounds like a good deal because, like I say, more people really need to get into programs like yoga and Pilates to work on flexibility, range of motion. And for golf, I mean, that if you're going to work on anything to improve your game, flexibility and stretching is probably the number one.
Hmm. Interesting. You also mentioned earlier when we were talking about balance and the positions, you talked about the magazines. And there seems to be, we all know how many golf magazines there are, and the cover every month, one way or another, says greater distance. In this article, you're going to get greater distance.
Yeah.
And learn the new twisted spine swing things. And I avoid them at all costs. But what's your take on what's going on in the magazines and what they're promising us, and how we're going to increase our power by whatever it is they offer? I don't know.
Well, I mean, they're hitting the buttons, that's for sure.
Oh, no question about it. Listen, is their primary goal to educate or to sell magazines?
Sell magazines, yeah.
Right, exactly. Well, yeah. I'm sorry. To me, it's all about education. If we can educate, then we're going to win.
Yeah. And I think the journals and the publications do a great job at offering tips and telling you, that you need to have a big shoulder turn for power, and you need to maintain a good wrist hinge in the downswing to generate more power, and that's going to get you more distance. But the issue I have with the journals, and hopefully that'll change, as golf fitness becomes more prominent and more people are, buying into it in the industry, is that they need to tell you how to get into those positions or what may be your restrictions, physical restrictions, for getting into those positions. Because, for the average golfer, picks up a journal and says, oh, okay, I just got to make a bigger shoulder turn. And when they go out there to try to do it, they can't because they got physical weaknesses or tightnesses that just aren't allowing them to do that.
Right.
And it would be great for these journals to follow up with, okay, you got to make a big shoulder turn, and here are some possibilities. Here are some scenarios that you may fall into. You may have a tight mid-back, which is restricting your ability to make a good turn. And, here are some exercises to help you remedy that situation. Kind of get into some different scenarios and some examples of how to, improve upon those. And I think
the photographs that they're going to show of people doing these big shoulder turns, they're either tour players, or they're golf instructors, or they're fitness instructors, or they're golfers like Michael Hamill, which is
a professional quarterback.
Yeah, right. And Michael's a golf smarter listener, but he is a workout fanatic, and he's got this amazing body, and he does YouTube videos, and just come on. What about Joe Schmo? What about the weekend golfer who is getting older, doesn't have the flexibility? What about pictures of those guys and really showcase to us what can we really do?
Yeah, and it's funny you bring that up because I did write about that in one of my articles. How the Butch Harmons of the world and the other famous golf pro teachers, you know, they tell you how to get into these positions. And yeah, the pictures they have in there are their students, and they are professional golfers.
Yeah.
Who spend 2, 3, 4 hours a day with a personal trainer doing specific exercises so that they can get into these positions. And then going out, you know, on the golf course and practicing for 3, 4, 5 hours. So, yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, for the average golfer to try to get into a lot of these positions, you know, it's an uphill battle.
And are they really power positions? What are they selling when they say that? I mean, obviously they're pumping, you know, is you're going to get more distance.
Yeah.
But can they be detrimental, these things they're trying to show us?
Well, you know, if for the average golfer who most golfers don't realize that it's their own bodies that are holding them back from playing better golf. And so they pick up a magazine and they read about these various positions you need to get into. And so they go out and try to do this stuff. And because they're not physically prepared well to do that, it can increase the risk of injury. There's always compensation going on, and that sets you up for injury as opposed to, you know, let's just kind of stick to a standard swing and, you know, let's take a look at your body to see where the restrictions are and let's correct those so that you can make those moves and get into those positions.
So interesting. And so then I'm curious, when it talks about these positions, and we've talked about so often, you know, you got to start with PGA, position, grip, and alignment, or posture, grip, and alignment. These positions, does it address the fact that, and from what I've seen, most golfers don't have the correct posture when they're addressing the ball?
Oh, yeah, gosh. I mean, the C posture, the kind of the bowing of the back.
Right.
When a golfer stands over the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And it used to be a older golfer's disease. But nowadays, I tell you, Fred, it's just unbelievable how many C postures I'm seeing, even in the younger golfers.
Really?
Oh, gosh, yeah. And the reason is computers. I mean, the fact that many of us are sitting at our desks, hunched over our computers all day long, the body basically adapts to the position that it's placed in most of the time.
Uh-huh.
So when you're hunched over a computer, basically your shoulders are rounded, right?
Yep.
And so that shortens the muscles in the chest area. And when you shorten a muscle over time, it basically tightens and it elongates the muscles in the upper back. And when you elongate a muscle, you weaken. So what happens is, and you can see this in, you know, when you're in the mall or when you're at the beach next summer, I mean, look at people's posture. Even the young kids, it's terrible. The amount of rounded shoulders that are out there are unbelievable. It's like an epidemic. And so what happens is, you know, you're a golfer, you're spending 8 hours a day hunched over a computer. And then on the weekends, you go out and you get over the ball and you're taking that rounded shoulder posture out there with you. So right away, you're setting yourself out, you know, up coming out of the gate of not being able to make an efficient swing because a rounded C posture will reduce your backswing by about 30%. So you can't make that good shoulder turn. You can't get the club back far enough to be able to generate enough club head speed to get power and distance. So you run into issues. I work with a lot of dentists, and almost every single one of them have C posture because they're hunched over their patients all day, you know, working on their teeth. So, you know, stuff like that, you know, lifestyle that we alluded to can really impact your golf game. And for a lot of average golfers, they're just not aware of the fact that their posture is terrible. And it's unless somebody, you know, says, hey, do you know you're really hunched over that ball? And do you know that it's going to affect your swing and yada, yada, yada? I mean, the only way to really get the club back when you're in a C posture is to stand up while you're swinging the club back. So what's going to happen is you're going to change your swing plane. That's going to mess you, and balance can be an issue. So, I mean, there's a whole host of things that can develop from having bad posture over the ball.
Can you expand on yada, 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 please?
Yeah. Well, how did I use that?
I've been waiting for somebody to say yada, yada, yada for years. It's like, what do you specifically mean about yada, yada, yada?
Seinfeld, Kramer. You got to watch the episode.
Sorry for interrupting. What were you about to say?
Well, the other thing is, you know, the other posture that I'm seeing a lot is the S posture, which is characterized by an excessive arch in the lower back. And it's more predominant in women and in younger golfers.
Give me a visual, because I'm not S looking from which direction. Are we talking about like a curvature of the spine, or are we like chest out, butt up? What are we?
It's kind of like your lower back is arched and your butt is sticking out.
Okay.
All right. And like I say, it's more predominant in women and in younger golfers. And the big reason is, again, it's due to a deficiency in the body. Women tend to have tighter hip flexor muscles, which are the muscles in the front part of the hip. Women are from Venus, men are from Mars. It's just a phenomena. Don't know why it happens. All the golfers I test, you know, women tend to be tighter in the hip flexors. Men tend to be tighter in the hamstrings, which are in the back of the thigh. And that can lead up to back issues.
Sure.
But the S posture, and again, this seems to be one of the biggest articles that gets a lot of hits on my website each month, so there must be a lot of individuals in there suffering from back issues and who have S posture, whether they realize it or not. But the S posture with that excessive swaying of the back is just going to kill the back over time. I mean, kill the back. I mean, just try standing up and arching your back, get into your golf stance, arch your back, and then swing a golf club, and you'll know how painful that can be. So imagine doing that again and again and again and again. And again, a lot of it is because of the fact that those hip flexors are tight. And going back to sitting, when you sit, you're going to put those hip flexors in a shortened position. And again, when you shorten them, you tighten them. And so over time, you know, your lifestyle can impact your golf game. And I got an article on the website that just talks specifically about how sitting can wreak havoc on your golf swing. I do a workshop. I go around the area here and do a workshop for a lot of businesses. It's called The Anatomy of a Sitter. And it was based on, you know, what I was seeing in the C posture and younger golfers, and kind of led me to do some research on this, and there seems to be more and more coming out now about the negative consequences, health consequences of sitting. It's really interesting.
Chairs are sheer hell for me.
Your chairs?
Yeah, chair. I have switched and purchased so many chairs, it's unbelievable, and it's always... I'm a desk jockey. I'm at my desk many, many hours a day in a row, and I just have a lot of trouble with my lower back, and it's been, it wasn't until first I started sitting on one of those exercise balls for many years, but then I found a chair that mimics one of those balls, and it forces me to sit up straight, and it's been hugely beneficial for me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we talked about the hamstrings. I mean, the tightness in the hamstrings, which are the muscles in the back of the thigh, are one of the major risks for low back discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the relationship the hamstrings have on the hip bone, and because what they do to the hip bone, they basically, it usually takes about the third decade for people to start experiencing back issues from muscle deficiency. And so those tight hamstrings are going to pull that hip bone down kind of towards the back. It's going to rotate the hip towards the back. And so what that does is, because the lower back muscles are attached to the top half of that hip bone, as it rotates down, it stretches out the low back muscles, and it leaves them in a taut position. So early signs and symptoms are, you sit for long periods of time, you get up, your back's a little tight, you play around the golf, your next day or two, your back's a little tight. The more serious consequence is, as that hip bone rotates, it also will take that normal curve in your lower spine, in the lumbar spine, and it'll straighten it out. Now, you don't want to deviate from that normal curve. It's there for a reason. If you straighten it out or if you increase the curve, you start putting more pressure on the discs in between the bones in your spine, and you start to wear out those discs faster.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And that's when you start putting pressure on the nerve roots, you know, getting into the sciatica, and you just get back pain and all that kind of stuff.
Welcome to my world.
Yeah. And so sitting will also shorten hamstrings, as it does hip flexors. Mm. Now, the tight hip flexors pull the hip bone in the opposite direction. It kind of rotates it down forward. And that increases that curve in the lower back and creates that sway back. And that's why a lot of women tend to have those tight hip flexors, and they tend to have that S posture, and, you know, their backs are killing them. So it's either way, you know, tightness in the hip flexors, tightness in the hamstrings, and you're going to have issues. And I can't tell you how many times, you know, and I work a lot with low back people who have even gone through surgeries and have the ruptured discs. The problem is, in many cases, is they don't look for the mechanism of injury. They treat the pain, but they don't treat the reason, you know, the cause of how you got to the pain. And in many cases, it's that the imbalances in the muscle that create the misalignment. I can't tell you how many people that, you know, I've worked with that you identify the deficiency and then you give them some stretches to do, and it's amazing how much better they feel.
I'm not surprised at all.
Yeah,
I'm not surprised at all. I have so many more questions for you. I'd really like to talk about golf injuries and where they come from and what we can do about them, and various things about how the swing can screw up your spine and things like that. I really have a lot more questions. Could you stick around and we will record part two of this conversation?
Sure.
Awesome. All right. Well, that will be next episode, and it will be a Golf Smarter for members only. So if you have had any aha moments in the past 30 minutes, because I've had four, then I encourage you, please, to join Golf Smarter for members only at golfsmarter.com and take advantage of the fact that you will have a new episode of Golf Smarter every single week. You'll get to hear part two of this conversation and part two of all those conversations that you've missed, and have complete access to our archives of 7 years of Golf Smarter podcasts that all have content that you will have. You could potentially have an aha moment. So before we leave, for those who are not Golf Smarter members, Bob, tell them how to get in touch with you and what your website is, please.
My website is www.
Nope. We did this before. You don't need the www, Bob. Come on, Bob. You don't need that. Try it again. Take two. Come on.
The golf website, golf fitness website, is golffitcarolina.com. It's golffitcarolina.com.
Excellent. And you have articles on there as well, correct?
Articles, yep. Videos. I post stuff, new stuff every month. I post a new exercise of the month, usually the middle of the month, and a lot of good information on there.
Awesome. All right, stick around. Part two coming up. Thanks so much for joining us, Bob.
No problem. My pleasure.
This episode of the Golf Smarter Podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. Audible would like to provide Golf Smarter listeners with an opportunity to try their best-in-class service with a free audiobook of your choice from their enormous library. One audiobook to consider is My Mother Was Nuts, a memoir written and narrated by Penny Marshall. In this funny and intimate memoir, Penny takes us from the stage of the Jackie Gleason Show in 1955 to Hollywood's star-studded sets. From her breakout role on The Odd Couple, her exploits with Cindy Williams and John Belushi, and her travels across Europe with Art Garfunkel on the back of a motorcycle, we meet a young Carrie Fisher, whose close friendship with Penny has spanned decades. And we see Penny at work with Tom Hanks, Mark Wahlberg, Whoopi Goldberg, Robert De Niro, and Whitney Houston. for this or any free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. That's Audible, A-U-D-I-B-L-E, audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. Well, I am so happy to welcome Terry Kaler back. Terry, the Wedge Guy Kaler, and this is our Score Zone Short Game Academy. Hey, Terry, how you doing?
I'm great, Fred. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. In a brief overview, if you're new to our Score Zone Short Game Academy, Terry is the CEO of Score Golf, where they make incredible scoring clubs. You probably referred to them as wedges in the past, but you will learn quickly from these that that is not the case. Those are your scoring clubs, and he's got a whole different way of approaching it. Check back to our most recent members only episode. He'll give you a full explanation and we answer a bunch of questions if you missed it. But we're going to tackle one question today, and the question from Derek Zaskow means that Derek is going to be eligible to receive a customized Score 4161 wedge. And you can too. All you have to do is click on the Short Game Academy button at golfsmarter.com. It says Score Zone Short Game Academy. Submit your question, and if we use it on the show, you get to your own customized Score 4161 scoring club, and you'll also receive a Golf Smarter Switchblade Divot Tool, the greatest divot repair tool in the universe. I just know this for a fact because I do all this research, and I'm making this up. So, Terry, let's get to the question. And Derek is probably on the same question for a lot of people. Derek from Santa Fe, New Mexico. All conditions being equal, what do you think has more control for in-between distance shots, stepping on a gap wedge or easing up on the pitching wedge?
Well, my answer is neither one. And let me explain that.
Thank you.
When we have a short club in our hand, a wedge or a short iron, we're looking for pinpoint distance control. Dave Peltz has done a lot of research on this and shown that inside 9-iron range, people tend to not miss left and right as badly as they miss long and short. And there are two parts of missing long and short. One is just simply mishitting the shot, catching it thin or catching it heavy, laying the sod over on it, as it were. But one of the other problems is that we're trying to step up or ease up on these different shots to hit our in-between yardages. I think there's two parts of the solution, Derek, here. One is to go out with your laser rangefinder or even step it off if you need to and find out what is your comfortable full swing distance with each of your scoring clubs, your nine, your pitch, your gap, your sand, your lob, whatever you carry there, and monitor these gaps, measure them out and find out, I think a gap wedge is 105, but is it really? Go out and hit five or six balls of your gap wedge. Leave your bag there, take your laser rangefinder, walk down, find the center of that pattern, and shoot back to your bag and say, okay, I thought it was 105, but the center of this pattern is really 98. And do that for each of your scoring clubs, because there isn't hard math built into your set. You may find that you have 14 yards between your pitch and your gap, but 12 or 16 yards between your gap and your sand. What you're shooting for is consistent gapping, but to know these yardages. I wrote a book called The Score Method that's available on our website if you hunt around for it, that is about then dissecting those gaps, not by stepping on it or easing it up, but by changing your hand position, gripping down on the club, I can take off about a third to a half of the distance gap, gripping down another half inch, which will take off a little more. You can build a measure of precision without thinking about swinging harder or swinging easier just by changing the length of the golf club, which produces a little less yards than that club did at full swing, full length. You can then dissect that a little more by experimenting with a very slightly open club face. Again, this book called The Score Method dives into that. But I want to go into the other side of this question. And you're talking about stepping up on a gap wedge. A full swing with a high loft golf club, what we call a full sand wedge or a full pitching wedge or full 9-iron, is not anywhere near as hard of a golf swing as a full 5-iron or a full 3-wood. These are precision golf clubs. And when you back off on them a little bit and throttle down just a little bit,
and redefine what you can consider a full swing, you'll find that your trajectory comes down, your consistency of impact will improve dramatically, and your distance control will therefore get more consistent. It really doesn't matter whether you hit a pitching wedge 110 or 120 or 140. The key is, can you do that consistently? Can you stand there at 140 going, I know this is a full swing pitching wedge and hit it? Or can you stand there at 105 and say, I know this is a full swing pitching wedge and then hit it 105? So control your gaps, you know, measure your gaps by going out on the range, and then dissect your gaps, not by stepping on it, not by easing up, but by changing your hand position on the grip to shorten the club by half an inch or three quarter inch, and watch what happens. It's a wonderful exercise to go through to learn about your golf clubs.
Well, I want to, I hope everyone got that. You know, we had a little bit of a problem with the Skype signal, but it seemed like I was able to follow along, even though it's kind of choppy. I still got the crux of absolutely everything you said. So I want to, you know, make sure. And if anyone's been having trouble with that, please let me know, and get back to me. Just email me, and we'll work on that. We can even redo the question if you want. But I'm pretty sure you got everything. I sure did, and I thought it was great advice. Thank you very much, Terry. And this is a perfect time, now that we're getting into the beginning of the holiday season, I think this is a perfect time to remind everyone that as a Golf Smarter listener, you want to make sure that those Score 41-61 wedges are on your shopping list or even on your personal gift list, because you're going to get a 10% discount. How great is that, right? You tell people, they go, well, what do you want for the holidays this year? And you say, well, I actually want a new wedge, and I can get you a 10% discount. And if you're a Golf Smarter member, I can get you a 15% discount. So why don't you make sure that you put that on the list and tell those people, and then give all your golf buddies Golf Smarter memberships. It's not that expensive. This is all good. So, and submit your questions, and you could just get one for free, but I think you should go buy the entire set. Terry, thanks so much for another Score Zone Short Game Academy, and two more episodes, and we'll see you then.
That'd be great, Fred, and look forward to it.
Questions, comments, reviews, testimonials, holes in one, or suggestions for guests, just click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.